You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Issuesetc.org.
Now, some of you may think I'm exaggerating when I say this November's elections are more important than any I can remember in my lifetime. And I know politicians say that all the time. I have been guilty of saying it a few times, particularly when I was on the ballot. But just a glance at recent headlines should tell you that this moment really is different. The stakes really are higher.
So your vote in 2018 is every bit as important as your vote in 2016. Although I'm not sure I really believe that, but you know. I don't know who the hell wrote that line. I'm not sure. But it's still important, remember.
That's President Barack Obama recently and President Donald Trump both telling us that these midterm elections that will be held tomorrow, for which many have already voted in advance, are the most important elections you will participate so far in your life. Now, every politician says that. President Obama is right. That's a stock phrase of presidents and other political candidates. Most important election ever. It's intended to motivate you, but in a lot of ways, this is a watershed, at least a test in some ways, of things that have never been done before in Washington, quite the way they've been done by President Donald Trump. Many say this will be the referendum, a referendum on President Trump before 2020. Is that true? And if so, what will the various possible outcomes mean? Joining us to talk about the midterm elections, Mark Hemingway. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be here.
Molly, is there going to be a blue wave?
Well, I think it depends on how you define a blue wave, and there really isn't a good definition of what a wave is. But if the question is, are the Democrats going to trounce the Republicans? I don't think so, except it doesn't really matter because they have a very good shot of taking the House, taking control of the House of Representatives, and that's all they really need is to take it by one vote, and it changes everything, and by one seat, and I think they have extremely good odds of doing that. Anything is possible. Republicans are hoping for a big surprise, and certainly Republicans stand to gain in the Senate, but in the House, I think people should probably prepare for the high possibility that Democrats will take it.
What are your thoughts, Mark? A blue wave?
Well, I think that, it's going to be a good night for Democrats, but a big part of the problem here this election cycle is, you know, using phrases like a blue wave. One of the big mistakes in 2016 was that everyone focused on personalities and they didn't pay attention to sort of basic election fundamentals. If you look at what happened in 2016, of course, you know, the incumbent party having power in the White House and having that terrible an economy, it was likely the Republican was going to win. This time around, you know, if Democrats just win, basically, what is the average that, you know, the out-of-power party wins in a midterm election against the party of the president, Democrats are likely going to take back the House. But is that really a blue wave, the way that 2010 was the single worst defeat for, you know, a major party since the end of World War II? No, it's not going to compare to 2010 or I think even 2014, but it will be a good night for Democrats for sure.
Oh, so I guess that raises the question, Molly, of let's just say that with the way the polls look now, the Republicans retain the Senate, they lose control of the House, and it all falls within, as Mark said, kind of the average midterm losses for a party in power. Will they still be claiming that the tsunami hit?
Yeah, I think no matter what happens, people will be spinning it as good for their party or not so bad for their party. And there really are good arguments for both parties to have that spin. I mean, Democrats should not just take the House, they should be taking it by a pretty big margin if what you hear in the media is true, that Donald Trump is the worst person who ever walked the face of the earth, and it's a nightmare scenario that he's in office and Republicans aren't doing enough to stop him and his agenda is radical and all these things. Well, then, of course, you would expect to see a gain of at least 63 seats, like what Obama lost in his first midterm. On the other hand, the reality being that the economy is very good and that the Republicans have been fairly successful in actually accomplishing their agenda, whether it be tax reform or confirming judges who their voters want, well, then you kind of wonder why Republicans are having such a tough night. I was just reading an analysis that the congressional Republicans are running behind Donald Trump's approval rating. Like, they're actually doing less well in these contested races than Donald Trump's approval, which is sort of a narrative-shattering thing. You think that Donald Trump is a drag. Well, as evidenced by the fact that he's out there on the campaign trail, he's actually running ahead of a lot of these candidates. But, you know, it's one of the things that's very frustrating is people try to imbue a particular meaning before the facts come in. And even after we know what happens on Tuesday, I think it'll take a little bit of time to really understand what it all means and even whether there is a national meaning or whether it all comes down to local politics. But I'm sure we will have plenty of people taking credit for what went well and very few people admitting responsibility for what went wrong.
I live right across the river from St. Louis, Missouri, Mark, and so we get to see President Trump on television these days on a very regular basis. He's been in Missouri a number of times. He may even come back once more before tomorrow. But these Trump rallies, are they unprecedented in terms of not only the numbers, but also what it may mean for the actual voter turnout?
Well, I think that, you know, it's been fairly commonplace for presidents to do some sort of campaigning for their party. I will say that the Obama administration, there was a lot of criticism of him because he sort of kicked that up a notch. And certainly you could argue that Trump has taken that up, you know, even further. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, making personal appearances in key areas or whatever is one of the few things, you know, in terms of political science that's shown to have a really positive effect on, you know, getting people out to the polls. So I think that you know, is not something that they're doing, you know, because they're doing it just to amuse the president necessarily, although Trump seems to enjoy these sorts of things. I mean, I think it is something that they believe really is working and helping.
Molly, one of the things that people have noticed is that President Trump's rallies coincide with Senate races, where the Republicans need to pick up seats, but he hasn't been doing so much of these rallies for House races. Does that signal that at least the White House has conceded that the House will likely be lost?
I've definitely heard people say that they're not caring about the House, they're only focusing on the Senate. I think that's partially just not true. I think they do care about House races, and if you watch these Trump rallies, they really do talk about the House races in play, and Donald Trump is tweeting out his support for various candidates. It's just that, in general, if you're going to visit a state, focusing on the Senate might be the best use of one's time, particularly when you're president. And it's just also the case that the dynamics of the Senate races are such that the Republicans are defending a bunch of seats that are favorable to them or trying to pick up seats that should be favorable in states that went for Trump, whereas all of the really contested House races, Donald Trump's presence is a more contentious issue. Some people love him, but he's also polarizing. It's kind of like President Obama was in his first midterm. He was not well received. So, it's partly strategic, but also partly true that Trump is still focused a bit on the House races.
We're talking about the midterm elections with Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor and a senior editor at The Federalist. Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. That's what you'll find at the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference later this week on November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. You can meet and hear Dr. Anthony Esselin on Western Civilization, Our First Freedoms with Dr. Ryan Anderson, Dr. Mark Kaltoff on Revisionist History, Transgenderism with Dr. Beverly Yonke, Pastor Chris Roseborough on Infant Baptism, and A Legal Case for the Resurrection with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. You can register online at issuesetc.org or give us a call before Thursday at 618-223-8255. 8385. It's the premier conference for Christian laity, making the case November 9th and 10th in Dallas. When we come back, we'll talk about the early voting turnout, which is higher than the 2014 midterms, all the turnout for the 2014 midterms. What does it mean?
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in his word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us. emmanuelpress.us.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seyfried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Religious liberty and some of the other First Amendment freedoms, they kind of hang together.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas.
That there's an ecosystem of liberty and that what they're meant to these various natural rights that we have, they're meant to respect aspects of human dignity, the dignity of the human person to be free to live according to their conscience, to their deepest beliefs, especially beliefs about God. And therefore, they're meant to promote human flourishing, that freedom is intricately connected to truth, and that living in accordance with the truth is how we flourish.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Attendance is limited to 400. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of Fox News about the midterm elections. Mark, at least according to reports, early voting, the turnout for early voting is higher, actually, than the turnout for all voting in the 2014 midterms. What, as far as you're concerned, what does that mean?
Well, it tells me a lot of things. I mean, one, it tells you that people are engaged and that, you know, people are, you know, voting in unusually large numbers. I'm saying, you know, we've been told, I think, repeatedly that, you know, voter engagement is some sort of sign of civic health. I tend to view it the opposite way, which is to say that people are very concerned about the direction that the country is headed, and that's the reason why they're engaged, or at least historically, if you look at the U.S. and the periods where they have the highest voter turnout sort of correspond with difficult, you know, times and eras in this country. And I think that's true of this era in the sense that while things might be going well in terms of the economy and stuff, I do think that people feel that there is certainly a real ideological struggle for the path forward for this country, and that, you know, the losing side stands to, you know, be hurt badly if we don't win this long-term battle, you know, in the short-term elections.
Molly, what are your thoughts on the early turnout?
Well, I think it's just hard to understand what early voting means, and I am very humbled by the 2016 reports that Hillary Clinton had locked up Florida through early voting, and it turned out she lost that state. Hillary Clinton did not win Florida, despite a New York Times article saying that early voting meant that she had. It is something that parties like to do, is get out their early vote, because it just means they've locked in these people, and that even if something goes awry on election day, they've already locked in these votes. But it doesn't really matter when you vote. What matters is the ultimate total. So if the early voters are new voters or people who previously voted for a different party, well, that's meaningful. If it's just your normal voters and they're voting a few hours or days earlier, it doesn't mean much at all. So it's very hard to determine at this point. And also because sometimes a given political party in a state just has a very good early voting apparatus, but it doesn't change their overall totals. We'll have to unfortunately wait and see what happens on election night. I should say we're blessed if we find out on election night and we don't have to wait for many days afterward.
I think it's worth keeping in mind that there's been a lot of developments in the past couple of decades in terms of sort of expanding people's access to voting, in terms of expanded absentee voting. Early voting has become a thing. A lot of states are doing, like Oregon, are doing vote by mail now entirely. So I think there was a time when people didn't sort of take those things seriously. And in the Obama era, they really focused on, you know, taking advantage of a lot of these things in a way that previous campaigns and people previously hadn't in previous election cycles. And they had some, you know, big gains as a result of focusing on early voting and things like that. Well, I mean, I think, you know, both parties have gotten wise to these things being important now. And so they both invest a lot of effort into early voting. So, you know, just because there's a high turnout in early voting, it doesn't necessarily mean anything other than voters are just generally engaged.
Staying with what matters to the electorate, what are the top issues motivating Democrats to vote right now, as far as you can tell, Molly?
Well, if you listen to national media, you would think that this is solely a referendum on President Trump. And, of course, it's always true that midterm elections are about who is president, and there's no way to avoid that. But if you look at the ads that Democrats are running in states, they are pretty laser-focused on health care. You want to pick an issue that people are angry about or concerned about that will drive them to the polls. And I think they have found that healthcare is a good one to focus on. It's something that worked with their base for, you know, for the past 10 years, and they are just continuing to do that. There's not much of an agenda beyond that, I don't think, and there hasn't, surprisingly, been pushback on their healthcare proposals, despite the fact that they're fairly radical and fairly socialized, and that Republicans tend to do well when actually having an argument about whether to socialize medicine and what the ramifications of that are. But that's where they're focused.
I think the Democrats would be doing better if they were, you know, rallied around a sort of more affirmative agenda than they are. And certainly that's been a problem. You know, it worked for the Republicans in 2014 to sort of be opposed to Obamacare as a policy agenda. But, you know, that was a much more focused and concrete thing than simply, say, being against Obama, which historically didn't help the Republicans quite as much. They needed a more sort of, you know, positive agenda in that regard.
Mark, what are the top issues that matter to Republican voters?
Well, I think immigration is certainly something, you know, has been really, you know, driving Republican voters for, you know, a couple of years now, obviously. Well, I think it was one of these issues that was simmering for a long time, and Trump really brought it to the forefront. Certainly the caravan and some of these issues have brought it to the forward. I think we saw from the polls that, for instance, the Kavanaugh effect was real, that, you know, Republican voters are very motivated by this sort of, you know, crazy PC culture where, you know, a man who is, you know, by all, you know, appearances a good man and innocent can be railroaded in a political circus like that, and that really sort of, you know, motivates Republicans. But I think it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, that the cliche is all politics are local. Well, they certainly are in this election, too, and we're looking at a situation here where, you know, if you look at the polls, there's a very good chance Oregon might elect a Republican governor and South Dakota might elect a Democratic governor, you know, and they're very unique issues in both of those states that are playing into those elections, and those are also races that are very much focused on the individual candidates and what they plan to do for their states rather than than necessarily being about larger politics. So the focus has been on national politics so much, you can't sort of discount what motivates people locally, you know, whether it's, you know, state finances and homelessness in Oregon, or, you know, whatever the dissatisfaction with the current rule of Kristi Noem in South Dakota. So you have to focus on local stuff too.
Mark, what about independents? What issues matter to them?
That's a really good question. I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, I think that this, because like we've discussed, you know, Democrats don't really have sort of a cohesive agenda. In fact, if anything, they're pulled by the, you know, sort of the far left extreme that is, you know, out and out socialist ideas. And then you have, you know, a lot of Democrats campaigning in the Midwest and other places that are trying to run as, you know, more moderates. They don't have sort of an overall like agenda. At the same time, you know, like we said, you know, Republicans are kind of in the same boat. You know, they're sort of, you know, trying to, depending on where you are and your district is, you're trying to, you know, either, you know, get close to or distance yourself from Trump. And you know, for independents, I don't know. I mean, I think the motivation for the American electorate in the last couple of decades, they seem to like divided rule or whatever because they don't trust either party. I think that, you know, independents might break Democratic just sort of on that sort of rationale alone. But, you know, trying to figure out what motivates independents in this current climate, I think is tough. And I just don't trust a lot of what the polling says about that in such a divided environment.
When we come back, we'll talk about President Trump's drain the swamp pre-election bid and what it means for the midterm. What are some of the most misunderstood and confused aspects of Christianity, and how can we respond? Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion, is the Issues Etc. book of the month for November. Clearly Christian is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Clearly Christian.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We're talking about the midterm elections. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist. Folks, you have a little more than 7 hours to take advantage of dramatically reduced prices during Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale. Find great savings on Issues Etc. books of the month, Bibles, music, educational resources, and more. The warehouse sale ends before midnight central tonight on November 5th. Learn more at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale, cph.org. Molly, President Trump ran on a drain the swamp policy, and at the time, That included his fellow Republicans serving in Washington. He ran against them in a lot of ways. And now that relationship has patched itself up to a great degree. But to what degree is the midterm a referendum on both Trump and the Republican Party?
Well, I'm not entirely sure, but it does make me also think about how, should the Democrats take the House, it will be something of a gift to Donald Trump. And I know that sounds counterintuitive because you think, well, if Democrats take the House, they're going to immediately start all these investigations and do impeachment proceedings against both him and Justice Kavanaugh. But President Trump does well when he has people who are enemies or people who are opposed to him that he can point to. And the media have been very useful in this regard in that they behave in a way that makes them an easy target. But it's been harder to run against Congress and the Senate when they're in your party, although that hasn't kept President Trump from trying. It'll be much easier if he can point to Democrats and say, see, these are the that they control the House. This is the problem. So in a very counterintuitive way, one of the best things that could happen personally to Donald Trump is that Democrats do take the House. It'll help him win re-election in 2020. And it is very, and people said he wouldn't be campaigning on behalf of Republicans because of some of these fundamental issues. And yet he has been campaigning for them. So that's an interesting dynamic. But you still see the tension between Republicans in D.C. and President Trump. You saw it even in the last week where President Trump wants to talk about immigration, knowing that you want to give voters a reason to actually remember why they vote Republican. And Paul Ryan and other, you know, more establishment Republicans are saying, why aren't you talking exclusively about the economy, which is thriving? Well, President Trump is talking about the economy, but that might not be the same motivating issue as for people who are normal voters as it is for Paul Ryan type Republicans. You want sort of a combination of all those things. But that's why I think it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if Republicans keep the House, that drain the swamp message continues to be kind of confusing and convoluted as it relates to Republican control of the legislature. If Democrats take it, it makes it much easier for President Trump.
Molly, we have mentioned the Kavanaugh October issue several times here. Did it work?
Well, it certainly was a mistake by Democrats to try this approach of derailing the Kavanaugh nomination. What their plan was not bad. It might have been immoral, but it wasn't a bad political plan, which was to put so much pressure on the Kavanaugh nomination using allegations that were not substantiated about sexual assault, that Kavanaugh would either voluntarily withdraw or Trump would pull the name, or that Republicans would say they wanted to put the nomination on hold. And had that happened, I think Republican turnout in this election would have been seriously depressed. Republican voters have been hanging on to the Republican Party by a thread. They're not happy with the way that they don't have a lot of fight in them. Instead, the unthinkable happened, which is Republicans stayed strong. They stayed together. They didn't cower in response to this push by Democrats to get Kavanaugh to be ousted, and it really excited the base. And it excited the base leading at least up until the beginning of early voting, and I think also probably to tomorrow, to the actual election day. Republican voters tend to be severely motivated to vote on court issues, and having a reminder that Republicans and Democrats, who aren't always altogether that different, are very different when it comes to judicial nominations, was just what the Republicans could have, would have hoped for, and they got it.
Several last questions for both of you. Mark, what are the top Senate and House races that you'll be watching tomorrow night?
As far as, you know, Senate races, you know, certainly I'll be watching Arizona. The Democratic candidate in that race is, I might add, terrible. Has a history of, you know, complete radicalism and saying outrageous things, insulting her state. And yet, if you look at the polls, she's 1 point ahead in the polling average of Real Clear Politics. So if she pulls that off, it'll tell us a lot about, like, what's going ahead. So that's one race I'm watching. Certainly Claire McCaskill in Missouri, and whether or not she goes down, that's sort of another bellwether that I'll be paying attention to. As for the House races, I honestly don't know what to say. I mean, you know, certainly there's a lot of things that are interesting for the long-term significance of how the House, you know, how national politics shake out. There's a bunch of vulnerable Republicans in sort of Southern California that where, you know, there's that it was for a longtime Republican stronghold that might finally be sort of kicked out, that will, you know, sort of further represent the transformation of California into a blue state. And there's a few things like that that are interesting to me from sort of a macro historical perspective. But I've been looking at the polling in the House races, and I just don't know what to say, because a lot of the polling in the House races are terrible. And they're polls with, you know, 400 or 500 responses with plus or minus, you know, margins of errors of, you know, 4 or 5%. They don't really tell you anything in close races. So, you know, a lot of what we're talking about with the House is, you know, sort of gut level intuition and big picture issues. So, and we really aren't going to know anything until, you know, the polls close tomorrow night.
Molly, Senate and House races, you'll be watching tomorrow night?
I just want to say, I think it's kind of exciting that we don't know what's going to happen, and that people also should be very humble in light of how much everybody messed up everything in 2016. There is such a variation in what could happen, from Republicans pick up a lot of Senate seats to Republicans lose seats, I guess would be a possibility in the Senate, to a wide variation of Democrats picking up like 50 seats, or even Republicans keeping the House. The races I'm interested in for the Senate, same thing, Arizona. Arizona and Nevada are Democrats' best chances to pick up a seat. Republicans have chances to pick up seats in Florida, in Indiana, in Montana. And it seems like they've got it locked up in North Dakota that they're going to pick up a seat there. And I think Missouri, they still have a very good chance, even though those polls are still tied at this late date. So I think Missouri will be an interesting bellwether. As for House races, I think we'll have an indication of how things are going to go by seeing some of those first seats that will be determined early in the night in Virginia. Dave Brat is a Republican who's defending his seat after winning it from the former Republican leader, Eric Cantor. And he has a tough race on his hands, so if he can pull out a victory, that'll tell us something. Barbara Comstock is a Northern Virginia Republican, very moderate, but she is in a very tough race in her district, which is comprised largely of Democrats and never Trump-style Republicans who want Democrats to take the House so that they can feel vindicated about their opposition to Trump. If she loses, or if she loses big, that might give us an indication of how things are going to go in the evening. Conversely, if she holds on to that seat, well, we might be in for a very long night.
Two quick final questions for both of you. If the blue wave occurs and Democrats win both House and Senate, does that mean Donald Trump is a lame duck president? Molly first.
Well, he won't be lame duck because he's only in his first term. And also, as mentioned, if he has a real opposition in a different party, that will help him run for reelection.
Mark?
Well, first we have to keep in mind that the legislative branch in this country, both the House and the Senate, is completely dysfunctional and has been for some time. So the idea that this is necessarily going to hurt Trump, I mean, the fact of the matter is that for a long time we've been trending toward an era of increased use of, you know, possibly, you know, even unconstitutional uses of executive power, combined with the fact that the president's bully pulpit tends to be extremely important in governing our politics. Add to that what Molly said earlier about Trump seems to thrive when he has a foil. It wouldn't help Trump, I would say, necessarily, for him to have to lose both houses, certainly. But it wouldn't be the end of the world either, and, you know, may even be, you know, sort of a catalyst for Trump to do something unique or different or whatever it is that Trump does that could put him in a catbird seat for 2020.
Molly, if the Republicans maintain control of House and Senate, how will the Democratic Party react?
You know, it's not probably good of me, but I want to see this outcome, if only just to see the answer to that question, because I can't imagine that if Republicans keep the House, people will respond in a particularly good fashion. I think that the Democratic Party is really struggling right now, deciding whether to go in a more moderate direction, because they've lost so many voters who are just moderate, blue-collar, you know, former Democrats, or whether to go much more extreme. And if they were to lose, that fight would just break out into the open. Even if they win, I think that fight is going to break out into the open, and you're going to see it be reflected in battles over who will be their new speaker or whatnot. But if they lose in a year when they had nothing, like there should be no option other than winning big, it would be very bad for them.
Mark?
Well, what Molly said, I think, is correct. You'll see more of an out-in-the-open battle between moderates and, you know, the far left. But the fact of the matter is that it's not like this issue hasn't been, you know, hasn't arisen before. You know, in 2010, in 2014, in 2016, I mean, the Democrats lost over 1,000 legislative seats across this country in the Obama years, and a lot of smart Democrats were saying, you know, we have to moderate, we have to go back to the 50-state strategy that Rahm Emanuel was running before Obama was in office, and Democrats made great gains. And where did that get the Democratic Party? They have continued to go left, 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 left. Even with Hillary Clinton, you know, who was a candidate who was very much inclined to be a moderate Democrat, you know, she was pushed so far to the left on so many issues in the primary. I just don't see a situation where Democrats, you know, don't respond to, you know, anything that's thrown at them by, you know, insisting that they need to go full socialist or something like that. So, you know, whether or not, this is the straw that broke the camel's back to a more moderate approach, you know, it's possible that might happen, but I don't know. I just see the Democratic reaction to everything going forward as being, you know, more extreme left positions.
You can read Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, thanks.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series Introducing the Quran, talking with Dr. Adam Francisco about Surah 96, believed by Muslims to be the first revelation to Muhammad. We'll also talk with Pastor Tom Baker, and he'll lead us in a Sunday school lesson on the Ten Commandments given to Moses. When you vote tomorrow, remember, it's part of your vocation as citizen. And remember, you're voting on behalf of your neighbor, not on behalf of yourself. Vote for the other guy. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian, but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADC, RUCEM.com.